Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
That's right. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959 with myself, Guguletu Mfupi. You are always welcome to do the show with me. And of course, we value your feedback, your comments and questions that you might have for us. 063-688-0959 is where you can share your voice notes to. We're happy to take your questions and, of course, opinions too. Over the last 2 days, the likes of Zunge, Gigi and a few others have been sharing their voice notes. And a large focus has really been on how Africa needs to respond to the tariffs. We've spoken about the impact it has on South Africa's agricultural space, our mining fraternity, automotive space, but also just in terms of AGOA and the trade relationship we have there. We've spoken about how our neighboring countries have sought to respond. Botswana, perhaps taking a more diplomatic stance, much like South Africa, seeking to go to the negotiation table. Zimbabwe, on the other hand, we heard last night that they've decided to essentially remove and suspend any tariffs on U.S. Manufactured goods coming into their country. But tonight we're going to talk about the other economic superpower, China, who have been very clear that they are going toe-to-toe with the United States of America to also impose tariffs and even certain restrictions on goods that are produced in America. Yesterday, we got confirmation that Donald Trump has now imposed a total of 104% tariffs on Chinese-produced goods. China itself has implemented an 84% tariff on goods coming from America. The EU has now voiced that they are looking to implement 25% tariffs as of next week on US produced goods. So, as we can tell, there's a lot of retaliation, but we're going to focus on China specifically. Not only its position, its economic growth, but the stance that it's taken on the retaliatory path of tariffs, and also how this perhaps does give us some insight into how China remains the second largest economy, global superpower in itself, and a key peer and partner to countries like South Africa, if we do take into account our BRICS partnership. Feroz Barsa, Head of Global Emerging Markets at Sanlam Investments, joins us now. Feroz, such a pleasure to have us, to have you with us. I'm excited for this conversation because I can imagine you have been operating on very minimal sleep over the last few days.
Hi, Google. Yes, I was listening to your previous interview. So we're right in the front of things, right? Mm. So when we see these red screens, it affects our portfolios and it affects our clients. And, you know, with everything that's happening now, you know, a colleague of mine said, what if Donald Trump speaks in his sleep? So you need to be up to date of everything that happens.
Exactly.
So yes, you need to be up to date with everything that's happening, because it's become a tit for tat now. You know, the US played its cards. It said, well, you know, we're not just going after China, we're going after the EU, we're going after the rest of the world as well, closing some of those loopholes that they've been using, Vietnam and the like, Mexico onshoring. So, yes, South Africa, like you said, taken a more diplomatic stance, which I think is good. We are a very small player in the global arena. This is largely a fight between the superpowers. I mean, you said it yourself, the number one economy in the world and the number two, and not far behind the EU, because, you know, people always look at China and say, well, China produces all these goods and all these cheap goods, and you know, they probably got the most to lose here. But if you just look at the US and what's happening now currently, right?
Yes.
Exports by region, like you said, EU reciprocated with 25% tariffs. They're actually the biggest exporter to the US with $600 billion, and a large component being that of autos. So people don't really know that, right?
Gosh,
and then Mexico, because I mean, a number of countries have set up plants in Mexico. Mexico is at $500 billion, and China is actually at $430 billion. So yes, this is a massive global trade war. It's significant because it's going after the allies, right, and after your main competitor. So, you know, it's really tough times ahead, and it's very, very, very uncertain times.
Got you. And I think this also explains in the market sell-off. We've been witnessing the likes of Volkswagen, BMW, Porsche, Stellantis, who produce Jeep, largely listed on the European stock exchanges. Since last week, they've seen a significant decline in their movements. And I'm hoping that this is where we can just tie in the link for everyone's understanding that what happens from a trade point of view does impact company earnings or projected earnings and positioning. And as a result, when the outlook is not positive, that's how the share prices then actually react, going up or down.
So market participants like us, okay, we're longer term investors,
yes,
right? Market participants, you've got hedge funds, you've got algorithmic traders, you've got all sorts of different traders in the market, right? And mm-hmm. information's available instantaneously. So when someone says we're starting at 25% tariffs on autos, you gave a very good example. So Volkswagen's margins are already so thin. The operating profit margins are already so thin. The average Volkswagen, because of a 25% tariff, is going to be on average $4,500 to $5,000 more.
Sure.
Right? So VW is sitting there. If you look at their financials, market's saying, well, they can't absorb that, right? And the distributors and the retailers that the showroom floors can't absorb because they're operating on very low margins already. So who bears the brunt? So market participants saying, well, VW sales are going to fall significantly, right? Because they can't do this. And if it ends up in the end consumer, which inevitably does, you know, you and I pay for this, so the US consumer will pay a higher price.
Yes.
That means VW will sell less units, and that will impact their profitability, and that's why the VW share is down so much. Take for example Tata Motors.
Mm-hmm.
Tata Motors owns Jaguar Land Rover. So when I looked at the analysis, because we do look at India from an emerging market perspective, all of these countries are important.
Yes.
Jaguar Land Rover's actual average cost per motor vehicle based on the tariffs is going to exceed $20,000. So they came out and they said, actually, we're stopping all units going into the US. We have to reassess. But it tells you why, because $20,000, who's going to absorb that cost on the Land Rover? And that share price came off significantly. Nissan in Japan also said they're stopping some of their models, and they want to see how this is going to play out. So there's huge ramifications globally, right? Those examples should give you an idea. The problem is who actually bears the ultimate cost
100%.
Is what needs to be asked.
And maybe let's discuss that. And I like the example you used of the $20,000 on a vehicle, because in rand terms, just very quickly on a calculation I did with the rand dollar rand exchange rate at 19, that's like 380,000 rand. So it makes it practical for us to understand that, geez, who's going to pay that much extra for a vehicle that was cheaper just over a month ago? And maybe let's talk about this dynamic as to who bears the brunt, especially using the two global superpowers as an example. China versus the US, 84% and 104%. This is not child's play. These are serious implications here.
So it's like, who's going to blink first, right? The US came out and said, we're implementing all the tariffs, obviously disproportionate against China and the EU, less so on the other regions, but some of the regions were hard hit. I mean, I can't understand how they eat Lesotho with such a bad tariff when, you know, it's such a poor country. But anyway, be that as it may. So the US and these guys came out and played their cards. Now, they said nobody must retaliate. But, I mean, if you're sitting in China, if you're sitting in the EU, you have to do something. You can't just take on all these tariffs. So you're saying, well, we buy from you as well. So if you're going to put all these tariffs on us, we're going to increase our tariffs on you. So that's what China initially came and said, listen, we're going to increase our tariffs by 34%. So just to create some form of equilibrium, even though we buy our imports from you is less, it's going to hurt some key sectors like the farmers with the soybeans and all those things. That's massive in the Midwest for the farmers. So the U.S. came out, Donald Trump said, well, if you don't remove this tariff, right, we're going to impose another 50%.
Mm.
So it's like, well, we retaliated because you started it.
Yes.
And now they imposed the additional 50%, and China said, well, okay, if you're going to do that, we're going to increase our 34% to 84% because it's a like-for-like 50% increase, like you said. So it's now who's going to blink first? So this is a political battle. Donald Trump, you know, the deal maker, wanting to negotiate all of these strong arming, but China's not sitting back this time. So China's prepared. The first time Donald Trump came in, his first term, he imposed tariffs. They were taken aback because that they weren't prepared for it, in my opinion. And as they went along with the second term, I think there's so much work that went on in the background and said, listen, guys, we need to put things in place because, you know, there's going to be these tariffs. And he actually, you know, on his roadshows was saying, no, he's going to tariff China. He's going to tariff China, Mexico, all of these countries.
Yes.
And he did it, right? And China's not sitting back this time because now they're more prepared. So, but the problem is nobody's a winner here.
Yeah.
This is a race to zero. I mean, nobody's a winner here. So take, for example, China exports more than $400 billion of goods, right? So I've been to China multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen their factories. I've seen their distribution. I've seen their logistics. Nobody globally can replicate what they have. So, yes, you can get a bit of goods from Vietnam. You can get a bit of goods from Bangladesh and the like. You know, you can get a bit of goods from India.
Yes.
But the manufacturing arm, the whole logistics network, the infrastructure that's in place, nobody can replicate it.
So in other words, China's got solid legs to stand on within these negotiations.
So they got the distribution network. They've got the infrastructure that's been set up over 30 years, right? So who else are you going to get that $400 billion worth of goods from, right? So if a guy sitting in the U.S., he's got clients that's demanding, as a retailer, he has clients that's demanding goods from him. He then sources the best price goods globally so that he remains competitive and the consumer pays a reasonable price for the product. So everybody benefits in this supply chain. Unfortunately, the U.S. then that means has a trade deficit because China just manufactures cheaper.
Yeah.
And that's how economics work. So I'll give you a very good example, right? And these are the things that people don't understand that's coming in future. So particularly for the U.S., because we're importing from China, so we don't have a problem. During COVID, there was an issue because I also look at key sectors like pharmaceuticals and the like. There were shortages of goods from Aspen on certain goods, and they weren't in the store.
Okay.
And I called up the Aspen guys, and they told me, listen, the key components, the ingredients, the active pharmaceutical ingredients come from China. And because of COVID, you know, we've had these ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When you went to some of these builders' warehouse and all of these things, there were key items not in stock because of the supply chain. With the computers as well, there were Lenovo and all these big players, there was lack of stock on the because of the supply chain, because China was going through COVID. It gives you an idea of how big China is and the implications that we saw just in South Africa. Now think about it. If the goods are 104% more, right? If you were paying $1,000 for an item, right? That item is $2,008.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to the retailer. So who's going to bear that cost?
Yeah. And that brings about so many more questions, right? Because we know then there's been calls for the Fed to potentially plan to intervene and cut interest rates. But the sustainability of that brings about another question. Politically, there's ongoing dynamics as to how Trump wants to position Jerome Powell in terms of interest rates going forward. And maybe we can touch on that very briefly. But for Rose, I'm also so keen just for us, you know, just to fully comprehend the manufacturing power of China. And yes, whilst this battle takes place between the two economic giants, but what the implications are as well for the rest of us within the emerging market space. India, South Africa, key BRICS partners have also been impacted by these tariffs. And I'm keen to understand how this might shift the trading basket to tighten the relationship between key players in the emerging market space already.
So that's a very good point, right? So what will happen globally now is that you need to start diversifying even more. You need to shift supply chains, right? It might mean that certain areas get flooded with a bit more cheap product. So factories can get rid of their stock. But key global players will start operating, building further alliances. So one thing that came out last weekend, which never happened before, right, was that China, Korea, and Japan, for the first time, met together to see how they're going to deal with the tariffs. It's never happened before. So that gives you an idea. So, okay, Japan is a DM, but Korea, highly affected by these as well. So these guys are all starting to come together and looking how we can realign some of this demand. Obviously, you can't absorb all that demand because if you think about it realistically, the US is a consumption-driven economy, and they're the biggest consumer of goods and services globally. So they are a big player. But other regions have become as important for China. So what they learned from the first tariff is they've exported more to other regions. So okay. Key regions like India could be a net beneficiary. I mean, yes. India from every side. India is a internal consumption-driven environment, so less so affected by all of these things. India does export quite a bit to the US, but, you know, they've been conciliatory in that aspect. India has a booming economy and can take on some of the other consumption activities. So that's why you've seen India has performed slightly better than some of the other emerging markets. Brazil has also come out and said we've got a big surplus to protect us from exactly what's happening now. And the Brazilian markets outperform quite a bit. So, yes, shifting supply chains, but it's going to be very interesting times. Yeah. But I always make the comment, I always feel that this crisis feels like worse than the previous. And when I was in COVID, I thought, oh, no, the world's come to an end. Nobody's buying anything. That's the worst. And when I was in global financial crisis, I said banks are going bust. But the one thing I do know is, you know, every crisis has similar patterns. At some point, sanity prevails. You've got to stay the course. Emerging markets are cheap relative to developed markets, and I think it's a big opportunity.
100%. I'm so glad that you've given us a refreshing perspective on it. And I think we need to invite you back, Feroz, given that you've mentioned all these crises, maybe even the dot-com bubble that also happened, and just some of the characteristics and how it is that you just need to ride the wave, especially for us as long-term investors. So all the best. I hope you get some rest. Asian markets will be open early later on this evening. We're still looking at the Asian markets, American markets, which are also fairly mixed. But calm heads need to prevail, clearly. Thanks again for your time, Feroz.
Thanks, Coco. Thanks. Bye.
That's Feroz Barsa, Head of Global Emerging Markets at Sanlam Investments. Share your thoughts with us. The conversation continues, and boy, oh boy, is there a lot to discuss. And of course, we're more than happy to get your thoughts on these themes regarding what we do see on the back of the tariffs. And this is where I get excited, because I can just imagine for so many of you that we speak to here on the show, many of you who are colleagues and peers within trading floors, that you must be dealing with a lot. Clients calling, lots of questions, instructions to sell this, sell that, hedge that. Where are you placing your bets? And I think it does give us a beautiful snapshot into the daily activities that take place for those who handle investments. But as Feroz highlighted, we've seen this kind of crisis before. The pandemic, global financial crisis, dot-com bubble. Hey, we've been here. Sometimes all we need to do as retail investors is literally just ride the wave.
You missed it live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.